Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla-Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for what we found out recently was episode 75, what we're dubbing the one-off special, Rick, and we are pumped to be back. I can't probably put it into words probably how excited I am to be back down here with you, sitting in the chair doing a podcast.
It's good to see you, Adam. It's been a while, isn't it?
It has been a while. We've ignored each other since March. Yeah. But what I wanted to say is I liken it to, I don't know if you've ever seen a Wikipedia page where a band has been going on a long time and they break up and it says, you know, such and such a band were a progressive rock band from. That would have been our Wikipedia page for a while. Two Regular Teachers were a podcast from the...
Yes, yes.
And we've changed it back to Two Regular Teachers are a podcast. We're kind of back on the horse a little bit.
It's got something to aim for, Adam, to get a Wikipedia article, maybe.
I think you can kind of make your own. I think people can get on there and edit their own. I've seen people do it. Maybe we just make our own one and sort of make up some background stories about us.
Well, I'd like to call ourselves Progressive Podcasters.
Progressive Podcasters, good, I think, yeah, so. Yeah. Maybe... Mavericks, Pariahs, maybe as well, we could have in there too. But all jokes aside, it is really nice to be back. We've been gone for pretty much two terms. If you add it up from March, it's been two terms. It's been a long time, and it's really nice to be back in the chair.
It is, and we obviously gave out some bulletins, didn't we, Adam, and some updates on our Facebook page around the time that we called it quits for a little while. And I think a lot of it was down to the fact that we felt like we were putting things off too much. We just had to make a call, didn't we?
We did, and it was, look, this is a labour of love. It's always been a labour of love. We don't, you know, get money from it. We don't get anything like we love connecting with people, but it came to a point where we had to sit back and take stock of, you know, our teaching careers and a lot of things we had on our plate, and we just had to say, look, this needs to take a backward seat just for a little while until we can feel like we can revisit it. And now we're just starting to get those wheels rolling again.
And the fact that we've been able to get this together, Adam, and be able to free up some time to sit together and record sets us in good stead for term four.
It does, and we're hoping maybe to have a couple more in term four. Definitely, I think we're aiming for a Christmas special. We always love our Christmas special and getting JP, John Pierce in.
Piercy would be, he'd be upset if we didn't do it.
I think he would be upset, so we kind of have to. But maybe, possibly having another one in there too, and then reassessing at the end of the year.
Yeah, Adam, and one thing I've been really excited about getting back into it, one reason, is being able just to catch up and talk about those regular things. And as we were planning this week's episode, I'm sure a lot of teachers who are listening tonight will be able to concur with this, is the stuff that crop up in Term 3. I think we've focused on Term 3 a lot, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
But we listed on our episode planner, didn't we? All the things that you and I have both been involved in this term,
yeah.
You've got the camps, concerts, sleepovers, fundraisers, fun runs, interruptions, student teachers. Yep. There's more to add there, Adam, isn't there?
There's a lot more to add. You can talk about meetings. Meetings is one thing. Professional development days, planning days, or, you know, even sickness, things like that that you've got to put in there to make it. Term three, it's funny, they used to talk about it as the quiet term.
Yeah.
The term three, everything kind of just settled down, you did a couple of things and it was all right. That couldn't be less true. If you tried these days, it's almost as if everyone sees term three as a quiet term. So we'll chuck everything into term three outside of reports and the start of the year. And you just feel like you've got something on every single week.
It is. And so I'm sure teachers out there, particularly Victorian teachers who are finishing up this week, this is our final week of the term. I don't know about you, but I am just looking forward to a physical and mental rest. I just need to stop.
Yeah, champing at the
just
bit.
Just a little bit, champing at the bit. So. Like you though, cramming a lot in this week.
Yeah, definitely. Just trying to tick things off and get things done. So, but as our good friend Tony Foster would say, there's only 2 days left because you didn't count today and you don't count Friday, so there's only Wednesday and Thursday left. So I'm going with this idea that I've got 2 days left.
Our regular listeners will remember Tony. I don't think we actually got him to talk about his mathematics that he does in terms of working out how many days you've got until holidays. But he's very good at it.
He's very good. We might have to get him on to do a specific topic about days left mathematics because it is quite interesting.
Oh, I've got a busy day Friday, particularly Friday morning, so his maths doesn't work for me.
Doesn't work? No, of course it doesn't. So, but look, we've got a couple of topics tonight that we want to talk about. We're just limiting it to two we wanted to talk about in depth.
We're trying to make the episode as regular as we can, Adam, aren't we?
Yes, we are. So it's two topics and an anecdote, and we're pretty pumped. So do you want to get into it, mate?
We might, and just before we do, Adam, we might also try and step back into the staff room to see what's been going on in the staff room as well this week.
I think we need to. So the first topic we want to talk about tonight, Rick, is something that's been in the news a lot. And actually, I mentioned to you, it wasn't part of our planner, that I mentioned that Steve Price was on the project recently talking about this one with a young student, which I found quite... It was almost like a little mini debate. Mm-hmm. And it was around school uniforms and their relevance in schools today. And there's been a couple of articles about... One about girls winning the right to wear shorts and trousers to all Victorian schools. Yeah. And then also the idea... and the thought that, are school uniforms even relevant in today's school, and are they just an archaic throwback to British schools, and do we actually need them? And it's a very interesting chat, because I've got my thoughts about it, and I'm sure everyone has their thoughts about it, but it is an interesting thing to talk about. Particularly, I think we want to start with the idea of the girls being able to wear their shorts and trousers to school. I mean, my first thought when that comes up, and I'll throw to you with this one, is that I can't believe that schools don't allow that. Mm. And I'd be interested to hear from anyone out there as well when we get, you know, when we put this episode up, what their school's policies are. But the idea of girls being told that they can't wear shorts or trousers seems, it baffles me almost.
Yes, you and I both work at schools where girls have the option to wear, like you said, shorts and trousers, or the school skirts. I guess we can't really speak for secondary schools, because the issue that's made the papers, I think, involves both primary and secondary.
Yes.
So maybe our secondary listeners could talk to us more about that, because like you, I was surprised that there were some schools, and I'm not talking about the private schools here and some of the Catholic schools, who have sort of more of a rigid, more formal uniform. Yeah. I'm very surprised that not all state schools are giving girls that option, but apparently not all are. But however, the article that was in The Age last week, that was where I first saw the issue, did say that most state schools in Victoria do allow the choice. Mm. Apparently it's made the news mainly, it's become really important of recent times, because there's a group who are pushing for uniform equality in Victoria, and they're called the Girls Uniform Agenda. In fact, it's nationwide. They're a group of Australian parents who say forcing girls to wear dresses and skirts reinforces rigid gender stereotypes. So it is balancing on that whole gender issue, which is so big in schools.
It is. Do we need to go that far with it? I mean, do we need to have this group and this agenda, and it forces this gender sort of type thing? I don't think we need that. I mean, I know we need probably people to kind of push it and things, but I just think we need to... It's common sense to me.
Yes, I think if a school is going to have a uniform, which a lot of the schools that you and I have worked at and know do, I think there needs to be that choice.
I think so. I mean, if you were bringing a 2 or 3 year school, let's say you got a new family coming in, and there were some girls sitting at the desk wearing shorts. I mean, what parent in their right mind would be going, gee, I love the look of the curriculum, but I can see over there that some girls are wearing shorts, and I'm sorry, I don't stand for that. I'm not going to come to your school. I mean,
you can't imagine
that happening. So why wouldn't you actually allow them to do it? It kind of, again, as I said earlier, it just baffles me that we even need to have this discussion.
Well, it's interesting, because I went digging further, and I found an opinion piece that was in the Sydney Morning Herald, and I think it made The Age in Melbourne as well, written by William McKeith, who, if I just scroll down, is a former principal of PLC's Sydney and Armidale, and he's the current principal of a Montessori school in inner Sydney, who took the argument a step further and said, why do we still have uniforms? Do we need them? Does it stamp out student individuality? He mentioned that, I thought this was an interesting point, that particularly the formal dress that private and Catholic schools wear, and I'm talking blazers, ties, vests, and you know that on the really hot days you see these students still wearing the full kit because that they have to. He's talking about how a lot of that came from British schools, and he believes that a lot of our school uniforms are modelled on the 19th century, and he's probably right in a lot of ways.
Yep.
He also lists a bunch of European nations. They have more traditional wearers of uniform. They don't have the government legislation. Countries such as Finland, Norway, France, Germany, even the US. I think his argument is that perhaps having a uniform stifles that individuality. But I know that you might want to talk about culture, because I know both of us work in schools where uniform is important, and our leadership care about culture. I know mine, they do.
Yeah. Look, I think it doesn't fit for me so much the culture. I think it's really good that you've got your school colours, and the kids have got that responsibility to wear clothes and look good. I think if you give them... I mean, I suppose you'd have a policy in there, but I think for me, the school uniform is really important in the fact that, number one, it eliminates problems in terms of financial gulfs, in terms of, you know, so those families who...
McKeith mentions that in his article.
Yeah, those families who may not be able to afford nice clothes. You've got lots of kids coming to school and they're constantly wearing these ratty clothes, whereas a uniform eliminates that. It stops them from standing out. They're all wearing the same uniform and the same things. The second one, I think we might have brought it up before, or I've spoken to someone about it before, is obviously excursions, things outside the school, where if your kids are all wearing the same uniform, then you can spot them a mile away. If you're somewhere in Melbourne, I know you know. I think you guys do urban camp. We do urban camp as well, going to Melbourne and mixing to do those sorts of things like that. If the kids are all wearing different clothes, it's really easy to lose them. So on the flip side of that, maybe you could just have a school uniform for specific days, like sport days and excursions and things, and the kids could wear different clothes to school. But I actually think it's an argument we don't need to be having. What difference does it make, really, if we have the school uniforms?
Well, that's an interesting point, because I want to take up I'll quickly take up the first point that you made in that little spiel there, was that about the financial side of things and status. McKeith says in his opinion piece that children can see through that. He said even if schools have best intentions to try and wipe away that, you know, haves and have-nots by having a generic school uniform, that kids can see through it. He thinks that that could be seen as insulting children's intelligence and their discernment.
I think he's going a little bit far there, isn't he? Well, I mean, how many kids are going to come up and go, look, we've got a school uniform, guys, and look, we can see right through this. Some of the, we don't need it. And I mean, I think he's kind of almost going too far to suit his argument there for me.
Well, he says that maybe there's more things to be proud about in a school, that maybe the values that the school holds, and I can't think of a better word than values, you know, the values and the culture that it builds doesn't need the school uniform to represent that. And I can see the point.
Yep.
Because the uniform, like you said, the uniform is not everything.
No.
I'm not sure where I sit on this, because I think you're right. All the reasons you said are fair. I think it's great to see students in a smart uniform or something that the colours that represent a community, a school. But I can also see maybe where, after all, they are clothing, and maybe it does take away that individuality. But then again, I can see the financial side of things. Yeah. So we'd love to hear from our listeners.
We would. Not only would I love to hear from our listeners about what their school does and their policies, but I'd also love to hear about, because I'd love to talk about it more, but we need to sort of finish this one off. But feedback from parents. I don't think in my 11 years of teaching have I ever had a parent come up and say, why do we have school uniform? We shouldn't have school uniform. Like, I just think maybe that's just our schools. I don't know about you, Rick, in your time in your primary schools and the schools you've been at, whether or not you've actually ever had a parent, or it's come up at a staff meeting, or...
No.
I don't think it's ever been raised an issue.
Only the issue is sometimes is when people are out of uniform. So students are out of uniform.
Exactly. So I'd love to hear about that, if there are schools that have a different policy based on parent feedback, and what their school's actually doing today, if they're... if they don't have the school uniform, if they do, and I guess what their thoughts are on it.
It'd be great. So please get in touch. Hi, Adam.
G'day, Rick.
Look, I hear you're organising the staff item for the school concert this year.
Yes, I am, Rick.
Great. Could I be at the front of stage for the bulk of the act? Things never said in the staff room. Adam, the second topic is something, again, we've discussed in past podcasts, and it's about us. It's male teachers. And the reason why I bring it up again and sort of revisit this as a topic is that it's made the news again. Now, we're certainly not trying to be male dominant here.
No.
I think we're very fair in the way that we discuss things, and certainly we've got lots of great friends who are teachers who are females. But the reason why I bring it up as a topic is because it makes the news still, and so it should be addressed, I guess. And so I found two articles, Adam. The first one was from The Age in Victoria, talking about the declining numbers of male teachers in primary schools still. And apparently, if the numbers continue on the track that they're on, male teachers will be extinct. By 2050, we'll be done.
Yeah. Gone. No
so
more.
That's fascinating.
It is.
I did some more searching and also looked in some of the other Murdoch papers, Adam, because I didn't want to be too accused of being too left.
Of course.
So I found something from the Herald Sun, Melbourne newspaper, about male teachers, particularly in primary schools, not just secondary, fearing student contact and worrying that that's how one of the reasons why they might leave the profession is the stress is too much about worrying about student contact. So I guess we just wanted to touch on some of the things that we see personally as male teachers, and also what's been touched on in the articles.
Yeah.
What first popped into your head when you think about where we stand at this in this day and age as male teachers?
The drop-off is interesting, and I think that the Age article...
It's concerning.
It is concerning, and I think the Age article spoke about that. There's not been an actual study into why it has been happening. So
it does say that. It says that a lot of the reasons that they've speculated on haven't been proved.
No.
But the numbers have come from a report that was in the Economics of Education Review that showed a steady decline. But the distress, which was one of the big things about exhaustion, was both for male and female. So a lot of those factors we know is not just a male thing. In terms of stress in the job.
It is. And I think it comes back to the fact that obviously, you know, I think everyone would agree that, you know, when you went through university, it'd almost be for every four or, you know, or every five uni students, probably only one would be a male, or four would be female. So I think, therefore, the male population in terms of teaching is spread very thin. And therefore, there are schools where you can end up being the only male. And I say that in the sense that you may have a male PE teacher who's there twice a week or things like that, but you do end up being the only male. And therefore, there are aspects of teaching that you're expected to do more of. Now, from my experience, and I was happy to do it, and it obviously didn't scare me away or anything, but camps. You need a male to go on camp. Yeah. So I went on both camps.
Smaller schools.
You know, that sort of stuff. Particularly in the smaller schools, or there was ASS days. I go to the ASS days. And you do all these sorts of things that extra just because you need to have a male there. But that then adds on to all the things that you're doing. I also wanted to touch on, I know I spoke to you off air about it, but because we are spread so thin, I think sometimes that male teachers can feel like they're on an island a little bit, and that obviously, you know, female teachers bring some wonderful strengths to the profession and some amazing abilities, and males do that too, but obviously there are, males can bring some other strengths and some other approaches and things, but because they're the only ones doing it, they're out on an island, there might be one or maybe two of them, that it can be seen not necessarily as wrong, but because it's different, it's not encouraged or built up or supported as much. It's kind of, well, you really should be doing it this way. There's not as much autonomy, I think, for the male teachers, and because it is seen a bit differently, because, you know, males have a bit of, you know, bigger voice and can be doing those sorts of things like that. It can be seen to be different when really it shouldn't be. It should be built up for what it is.
And part of me still feels a bit sad that we still talk of male teachers and we talk of female teachers and not just teachers. Because like, regardless of gender, we are teachers, and we've learnt, we've all got our own styles, sure, but but we've learnt this, we've gone down the same road, we all want to be teachers, and it's kind of, it's a shame, isn't it? To me, I think that that articles like this have to come out, even though these articles aren't lambasting male teachers. It's a topic. It's interesting just to touch on what you talked about. A principal from a Victorian school in the Herald Sun article said that because of this decline in male teachers, and there can be that I'm thinking of you saying a bit of an island, you know, being a male teacher or the only male teacher in a small school could be, can be isolating because you don't have those male-to-male conversations. That would be the same in a workplace where you're one of the only females.
And look, it even said that 67% of those people who were interviewed and surveyed said that they felt isolated amongst their staff, and that's, and I want to throw this out there in the sense that no one in that staff team, you know, I was at a school for a while there where I was the only male. At no point did I feel isolated. Like, I always felt inclusive. The female teachers never left me out of anything, or I didn't feel inclusive or anything like that. But some of the approaches and stuff could make it seem different, and that was through no fault of anybody's, but the fact that there's not enough male teachers to go around, and that's just the way it is.
We know that gender in workplaces has been a huge issue in that's made the mainstream over the last few years, hasn't it? And so it is still, I mean, a perfect workplace to me does have, you know, a nice mix of both male and female.
Definitely,
it is worrying that the report in the Age states that in 1977 men were 28% of Australian primary school teachers. In 2016, that had dropped by 10%, down to 18%. 53% to 29% over the same period in secondary schools.
That's unbelievable.
It is amazing. So there's a sharp decline, isn't there? I mean, what do you think, to kind of finish off our discussion, and I'd like to open this up to our listeners, what pushes not just anyone away from teaching, but what might be declining male numbers? Because they're clearly lower than female. What do you think? Because the Herald Sun article says it's about student contact, that males are too afraid that they, if a student maybe hugs them, that even if they tap them on the shoulder, you know, as support, that even that can
look, I think that's a real thing. I don't think it's as big as maybe that article's making out. I actually think that there just needs to be more positivity.
Is that because you and I, though, have had, I shouldn't say a clear run, because nothing's ever going to happen because we're good people, but is that because we haven't had to deal with that? I'm just wondering whether, I don't know.
No, it's not so much that I think I've had to deal with it. I mean, I'm conscious of it.
Yeah, I'm conscious.
I'm very conscious of it, particularly, you know, you don't want to be, you know, when I was teaching 5-6, you don't want to have, you know, a female student pop in and that sort of stuff, and you know, they're just talking about their work or something like that, no one else is around. You
that's
know,
right.
I,
you always, you
know, I would always go into the hallway or go outside.
You always want people around.
So yeah, exactly.
And then on the other side, I've got some good friends who have their children at my school.
Yep.
Very close friends. And those two daughters, one's in prep, one's in about year two. And they will offer a hug in the yard when they see me. Yep. And I made the decision, I spoke to their parents and I spoke to some of the people in my leadership, that I will allow that hug, because that's the only time, and I'm very close to that family.
Yep.
That's the only time in our lives where they're going to want to hug me.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's right. Yeah.
They almost feel like nieces, those girls.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
But it's interesting because you do see other students looking like, there's Mr. KT hugging that student. So, it's interesting.
To finish this one off, though, I want to throw out there that I think we need to see more positivity around the role. Mm. I mean, I think prospective people who are thinking about being teachers and they're male, I mean, I don't think it's said enough the positive impact that a male teacher can have on a student's life. You know, particularly down in the younger years, I know for me in the last couple of years, there's been requests, not to have me, but to have a male teacher, because there may not be a male role model in their lives, or their dad works away a lot and is not around, that impact you can have, that positive male influence can make such a difference in a child's life. And I think that needs to be the thing that's championed.
Mm.
Let's get away from some of this negativity and things, which is real, but you know, it can underline and just really build up the impact that male teachers can have in a school.
Absolutely. And just to finish off, Adam, isn't it interesting though, and this is just a whole other issue which we'll leave, more than half the executives in schools, so we're talking leadership, are male though.
And the low
representation is at the teaching level. So that's a whole other kettle of fish.
It is a whole other kettle of fish. But if you have any feedback about that, and not just about male teachers, but we want to hear around about the positive impacts that all teachers can have, but ways in which we can keep staff and teachers in schools, we'd really love to hear about
it. Just keeping good people in the job.
That's right.
Adam, we had to bring back the anecdote segment. People have asked for it. I want it. And after all this time, you walked in tonight and you said, I've got something for you. What have you got?
You wanted it, so I'm going to give it to you. Look, the topic tonight is one of the things that's happened for term three, and it's school camp and being sick on school camp.
Oh, no.
And it's ever happened.
You?
Yeah, me being sick on school camp. And talking about, but also throwing out to anyone who's got any of these sorts of memories or anything like that. Look, I want to set the scene. I got a call the Sunday before school camp on the Monday saying, look, we've got a couple of sick teachers. They don't think they can go. Adam, can you go? Now, I'm always happy to do that. I'm always happy to do that for my school.
Last minute, though.
Last
very
minute.
Good of you.
I wasn't the only one. There was another teacher who went as well. And that's what I love about my staff team. They'll step up to the plate and do that stuff. So I'm happy to do it too. So anyway, so this was down in Sovereign Hill. And it was a few weeks ago when it was really, really cold. Like it was, and down in Ballarat, it was just biting cold. So
we're talking single digits in the low single digits.
We are in the low single digits. Anyway, during the day, a lot of the time it was 3 degrees. There was a time where it went up for half an hour to 8 and went straight back down to 3. There was hail, there was everything. Anyway, so I went down for that day and did that one and was feeling pretty good. We did Blood on the Southern Cross and some gold panning and doing all that sort of stuff. So I'm feeling really good.
Did you buy some boiled lollies?
No, because I'm off board, lollies. I'm not doing that, so I'm trying to eat a bit healthy. So I had a vanilla slice. What happened from the bakery?
Great bakery.
Sensational.
Huge just, sausage rolls.
Yeah, cream buns, everything. Everything's fantastic. Anyway, so get through dinner, do all that stuff, go to bed, feeling pretty good. Wake up at 1 a.m. in the morning. Now, for those who've been on camps before, you know, there's a couple other male teachers who went. You don't get a cabin each. I mean, you're sharing a cabin.
Sharing.
And it's,
and you wouldn't have been in bed that long either. Only a few hours.
Yeah, only a few hours. And so it's easy to wake people up. And so I'm sleeping in the bed. And they were nice enough to give me the double bed. There was a double bed in ours that I got because I said, thanks for coming along and stuff. And,
it's good.
You know, and then,
it's so the small things at camp, school camps.
It is. We had
a double bed.
Look, it's a chat for another time because we had an unbelievable. We had the best rooms. The girls had rubbish. We had the best rooms. Mm-hmm. And we had a spa bath in our ensuite. Anyway.
Why are male teachers leaving the profession? No, I can't believe it.
But you get spa baths on camp. Anyway, woken up at 1 a.m. With a pretty bad feeling in my guts. And to set the scene for the rest of the night, and I'm going to talk about something from 1 a.m. through to 7 a.m.
Be careful here.
I had gastro. Two other blokes in this small room with a little ensuite bathroom separated by a door. Now, I don't think I've spent a worse 6 hours in all my life in the fact that there was none of that sort of thing. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you might need to go. You go, look, I could hold on. I could roll over and go back to sleep. Like, I'm lying there staring at the ceiling going, if I don't get up and go now, it's going to happen anyway. And so you kind of just, you know, you're beginning to sweat a little bit.
You poor thing.
All those things. So I had to get up. The first time I went, I knew one of them was awake.
Mm.
the sounds they would have had to have heard would have scared them for life. Like, I could see them probably sitting there going, I don't want to listen, putting their hands over their ears. And then it kept going. And I... Well,
they'll probably lay there going, oh my God, he's sick. I'm going to catch it.
Yeah, yeah. And but also having to listen to some of the god-awful noises that were coming from that bathroom. Now, it got to the point where I was so self-conscious about it that in the where you stay, in that Sovereign Hill area, there's two... I don't know if you know where they are. One, near one of the buildings, there's two outhouses, one for a female, one for a male. And they're always open. And they actually, you open the door, there's a little bathroom, you go in and there's the toilet.
The little outside toilet. Basically,
got to the point at 4 a.m. where I just put on all my clothes. And what I was doing is I was walking up and down the hallway to stave off the nauseous feeling. And then when I needed to go, I was going out into the middle of the night. And I would check my phone. It was -2. I was going out and finding my way down to this outhouse to go to the loo at this outhouse at 4 a.m. in that thing, because that was better to me than going in the bedroom and doing all that sort of stuff. And then I would come back.
Mr. Lavaz is in the outhouse.
Oh, jeez. And I would just pace. And I spent 2 hours just pacing up and down, and then going to the loo, coming back, pacing, loo, pacing. It was just awful.
It's still very fresh in your mind, isn't it?
It is. And look, those guys are really good. And it got to the point where we called our principal. Someone else on the 5-6 camp had gotten sick and had to go home. And my principal said, no, you've got to send him home. To the point where then...
Well, can I interrupt? Because this is a serious question. We know we have a lot of pre-service teachers who listen to the podcast. Yeah. And I think a lot of them might be thinking at them, during, even though you're only really thinking about your health at that time because you felt miserable, when's the time when you start to think, how am I going to get out of this situation? Yeah. Who am I going to let know first?
Yeah.
When can I go home? Can I go home? Mm. What was your thinking?
Because your first thought is to the kids and to the staff that I've come on this to help them out and I'm going to let them down. Mm. Like, if I go home, I'm going to let them down. No one's going to be able to come because we're already short staffed. There's already... My principal's going up to the 5-6 camp and that sort of stuff. And it got to the point in the morning where we had to have a powwow about before we went down to breakfast.
For any international listeners, a powwow, Adam, is...
It's just a bit of a chat between the teachers that kind of come together. A bit of a powwow. Anyway, where they kind of said, look, in a good way, we don't want you here because you're sick.
They
said that in a good way.
I think underneath they'd be like, get him out of here.
There's
the door, quickly.
Because I felt bad, I said, look, you need to ring our principal to double check. And she said, send him home. So then I had to wait for close to 2 hours for my wife to drive down. Thankfully, my daughter was in daycare. She drove all the way down to pick me up.
But your poor wife had to drive. I mean, people listening here who maybe aren't, even if you're listening and you're not a teacher, listen to all the going around in circles, all the conversations that have to happen just for getting... It's even like that when a student has to go home.
Yeah, it is. It's shocking to tick all the boxes.
Yeah, tick all the boxes.
I made it home.
To make sure you've got enough staff there still to
get by.
For the ratio.
Breaking up the groups, putting them into that sort of stuff. But I made it home and then I just slept. And I stayed away. Thankfully, I already had someone in my classroom anyway who was at the school, who was the PE teacher, who was looking after my class anyway. So I could stay away for extra and it didn't cost any CRT money. I went back. But I guess it was just the thought of, for my first time in my career, a sleepover or a camp, that I was sick and legitimately sick. It wasn't just I was tired, it was a bit flu-y.
Yes.
Like there was nothing I could do about that. So,
well, Adam, that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
And to finish off, can I say, for those people who don't know about Sovereign Hill, it's an old-fashioned place where you get to experience what life was like in Victoria during the gold rush in the 1850s.
Yep.
Maybe earlier. And we know that a lot of people get to dress up in the old garb and learn what it's like to be at school, clean their school desks and...
All that sort of
stuff. I wonder if a new activity was opened up at Sovereign Hill that day. You know, put on the old garb and go and clean the outhouse.
I'll tell you what, they would have been in there a while. I'll tell you.
But look, let's leave it there.
But if anyone else has been sick on camp or had a situation, they've gone on an excursion or done something like that where they've been sick and what they had to do to get out of it and survive to get through.
Because
it is survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear about it. So, mate, that brings an end to our first episode back in some time. And before we finish off, we do want to acknowledge a couple of people who left some lovely comments on the Facebook page. And thank you to people who liked it as well. We were quite chuffed that people still remembered us and wanted to hear from us. But Caitlin, who's a good friend of ours who teaches in Melbourne, we've known Caitlin for, I think, 4 or 5 years now, left a bit of a comment about social media problems in the 5-6 area in terms of cyberbullying issues. And we want to touch on it very briefly and probably build on it either on the page or in future episodes. But Rick, I know it's probably something more that you can talk about very briefly about some of the things that have cropped up for you and what you've done about that.
Well, just quickly, Caitlin, we'd love to this discussion to continue on the Facebook page. And any other listeners who have perhaps a BYOD program, at their school and maybe dealing with some of these issues. We're talking about perhaps, and I'm sure Caitlin would agree on this, we're talking about not just cyberbullying, but issues that happen with devices, possibly with social media, outside of the classroom. My short answer is that, and Caitlin's school probably has this organised already, is to have the policy around it. So all the contracts and all the forms that the kids sign at the start of the year are gone through. You know, you go through with the kids with a fine tooth comb. I know our policy has a step-by-step consequence procedure. So there's kind of level one, level two, level three. I can only think of the word crimes, but it's better than that. Offences, I guess. Yeah. And you kind of fit whatever happens into that level, whether it's meeting with parents, meeting with the principal. So I would say my first bit of advice is to have those ratified, you know, and they go through school council and that sort of stuff beforehand. Mm. In terms of Curious to Know, Caitlin wrote, curious to know how you and others approach these with students and parents. We've actually been dealing with some stuff, some Instagram stuff of late that's been happening outside of the classroom. And just the communication channels just have to be open. Yeah. We've got a lot of students who are seeing this happening on social media and are coming to school and with screenshots saying, here it is, you know, there's a student who's posted themselves on Instagram in their school uniform. And so because we've got the policy in place, we've got the evidence, we can follow it up. So at this stage, for the short answer, keep the communication open with the parents. If it's ongoing, you know, cyber and bullying being something that happens over and over, thankfully we haven't got to that stage yet. So in terms of if it got past the policy stage for you, where everything that you've got in place, it's gone above that. I haven't experienced that yet, but hopefully maybe some of our listeners might have some other ideas there.
Because we'd love to get the feedback from that. And Rick, that's a great little nugget of information and advice for Caitlin to sort of hopefully take away and implement. And we do want to keep this going on the Facebook page, and maybe next week in the holidays would be good to see, or once this episode's done, to give us some feedback as well.
And you know what, Adam, there was one earlier in the year I showed the kids and how to make their Instagram account private. Even though that's not our job to teach it at school, we know that enough of them are on there, and we knew that some didn't have it private. So I just showed them the help page, how to do it, and I thought, sometimes you've got to take things into your own hands.
You do. And that's great advice. And look, mate, it's been great to be back in the seat with you, and we'll see each other again in Term 4.
Well, Adam, it is good to see you. I think we're both a bit nervous.
We were a little bit. Could we still do it? Yeah. Did we know what we were doing?
We're kidding ourselves. Look at us.
Yeah, look at us. It's just like getting on a bike, isn't it? So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and the two of us are very glad to be back being two regular teachers.